Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's bring in Paul, shall we?
Need the latest news and analysis on your green and gold? Well, we better call Paul.
Paul Emig, our green and gold analyst, joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Paul, how you doing?
Good. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. First and foremost, I got to ask you, I know you're an NBA guy, too. Give me your thoughts on tonight's Bucks game.
Can someone be optimistically nervous?
Is that Yeah, that's what I'm at. I'm there. Yeah.
Optimistically nervous. Because you can't lose both in Boston. Right, you got to come back 2-2 to Milwaukee. So, yeah, I mean, it's huge. And it's just the series has been so weird because you've had Boston absolutely dominate Game 1, make Milwaukee look like, well, which is realistic. Milwaukee hadn't played a meaningful game in like a month. Detroit was, you know, you could just kind of show up and you'd win that. And before that, they had been kind of on cruise control for the last 2-3 weeks of the regular season. So maybe it was the wake-up call they needed. So that's kind of where the optimism comes from. And then the nervousness just because, you know, Bucks haven't been to an NBA Finals in my lifetime. You know, they've been to one Eastern Conference Finals in my lifetime, and I'm, you know, in my mid-30s. So, you know, it's just you just want to experience that, just like how when the Brewers were that one win in Game 7 of the NLCS, you know, six months ago, you just want to experience that, you know. So that's where the nervousness comes from, just because I think you want that to happen in your city so badly and for your team so bad. So it's, you know, it's a nervous optimism. How about that?
I would agree with that. Now I want to move over to the Packers, who signed, by the way, a bunch of undrafted rookies. That came across a little while ago, all the official announcements, so to speak. So give me your thoughts on some of the guys that they did draft and where it looks as if they went in this signing the undrafted rookies, because they grabbed quite a few dudes. They went linebacker, safety, defensive line, corner, one running back in Dexter Williams, and then another linebacker. It's all defense.
Well, it is. I mean, it's most. I mean, you got Elton Jenkins. You know, you got Jay Stoneberger. But yeah, you very clearly focused on defense yet again.
They picked up one wide receiver, by the way, Matthew Eaton, in the undrafted group. The rest of it was. Let's see here. I'm just kind of going through this. A guard, Larry Williams. A quarterback, Manny Wilkins, the kid out of Arizona State. Then it was a tackle and Yosh Inman, a tight end and Copenhaver. But other than that, it was very defensive heavy.
And I find one of the things, I have two big takeaways, I think, from that kind of secondary class, your undrafted class. Well, three, I guess. One is, you know, you're just kind of hoping you can strike lightning in a bottle in undrafted free agency. But I think it's interesting that only one wide receiver signed with the Packers. And that is on the advice of their agents, you know, in terms of what realistic chance do you as an undrafted free agent have to make this team? In the past, you know, they have brought in 2, 3, 4 undrafted wide receivers, sort of in the 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014 heyday. And, you know, yes, you've seen some breakthroughs since, like Geronimo Allison, who I think went undrafted in 2016. You know, and it happens here and there. But I think what we're finding out, not only did the Packers not draft a wide receiver, but they only signed one in undrafted free agency, the team and probably the agents around the league must think the Packers are set at wide receiver. I think that's fascinating. Number two, the one name that you brought up at tackle, Yosh Nijman, I believe is the pronunciation, if I thought
Nijman. 6'7".
Nijman. So he ran the fastest 40 time at the combine. So this is kind of one of those guys, Bill, where, you know, I'm going to say this respectfully, you're going to hate him because he's an athlete, not a football player.
Right.
You know, he's that guy that, you know, you put him out in athletic testing and you're like, how do you do that at 6'7"? And then, how can you be that athletic at 6'7" and still go undrafted? So he's, you know, very much a project that if you have the time to groom, you know, you might come out thinking, you know, how did this guy fall so far? Because he can test off the charts. And to test that well and still not get drafted tells you that, the, you know, the football part of it leaves a lot to be desired. But, hey, an interesting project nonetheless. And, two, I think another thing we found out because, you know, I don't know how the rest of the league views, you know, I mean, DeShone Kizer being what he was, a first-year starter in Cleveland, a high draft pick in the second round by Cleveland, and then, of course, the backup to Rodgers last year. I don't know what it says about Tim Boyle, you know, that there wasn't a serious interest. And I know you mentioned Manny Wilkins from Arizona State, but not a significant interest from, you know, maybe high-profile quarterbacks, or that the Packers didn't end up addressing quarterback in the draft. I'm kind of under the assumption, Bill, that between now and when's the first game? September 8th? Something like that?
Something like that.
That if any, like, noteworthy mid-tier veteran, you know, even like a guy in the late 20s, early 30s, were to get cut, I just, can you really go into the year with Kizer as your two? I mean, are you just punting the season at that point again?
Well, here's my thing. You traded for the guy.
Strategy?
Yeah, but you traded for the guy.
But, yes, and, you know, so for me, that's one of those, like, you know, sunk cost fallacy things where, like, well, you know, the Bucs should re-sign Jabari Parker because he was a number two overall pick. Well, no, at some point, you just have to say, we screwed up, our bad, let's move on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what John Horst did, and one could argue was his best move, was his non-move of re-signing Jabari. But having said all that, like, you know, at some point, it's like, yes, you traded Demaryius Randall for him, and but Kizer, he was a McCarthy guy. McCarthy and Ted Thompson in the, what was that, the 2017 draft. Remember the reports that came out? The Packers had the first overall pick of the second day of the draft,
mm-hmm.
round two.
Right.
And there was a report, like, around noon that day from Ian Rappaport that said, Packers seriously considering Kizer. And it was like, come on. Like, they're just trying to generate interest. And it, I mean, they ended up going Kevin King, of course, but that was not, you know, that was not for show. That was McCarthy and Ted Thompson loving this guy, and then proving their love for that a year later when they shipped off Demaryius Randall to Cleveland to get him. So, you know, he's a McCarthy-Thompson guy. Is he also a Gutekunst-LaFleur guy? We don't really know, right? But, man, it's I can't imagine that they are not going to be very looking heavily into anybody who might get cut between now and cut-down day in early September, because it's just, yeah, it's worrisome. But, again, maybe they really believe in him. Kizer is only 23, but risky proposition, I think, based on what we saw from him in his chances last year.
Talking with Paul Imig, our Green and Gold analyst, joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. You've got the young guys that that are in camp now, and you know, I look at the way Gutekunst brought these guys in, and granted, it's going to be completely different. We don't know, because remember Mike McCarthy used to put him into this, give him this DVD or whatever it was, this video of the history of the Green Bay Packers, and then they taught mm-hmm. him about where everything is, and you know, because it's not like you're learning how to put shoulder pads or helmets on for the first time. This is just kind of, you know, what it is. But I just wonder how this is going to go now that you've got Gutekunst in his second year, LaFleur in his first, Pettine's been there, done that. I wonder how different this is going to be and feel for some of these new rookies coming into the Green Bay Packers organization. Obviously, they don't know any better, but some of the guys that have been there, mm-hmm. done that, they're certainly going to have an experience to compare it to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and I wonder how much of this your listenership even knows. Like, everybody knows the history of the Packers here in the state. I found it really fascinating when one of LaFleur's first things to do was to take a lot of the old stuff off the walls at Lambeau. You heard about that, right?
Right, right.
So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I we kind of went through that. I get why they did it, because, you know, his argument is we want to, you know, do the here and now. We want to create our own
Absolutely.
Future. I completely agree it. Because you're not going to go around the... I mean, you walk out into the field and the Ring of Honor shows you who is who. You know what I mean? It's there. Yeah. It's staring down on you.
But what I think that points to, though, is... And I'm good with it, too, Bill. But you talk about McCarthy and, you know, here's the history of the Packers and here's why you should feel so fortunate to be a Packer. And all stuff that, yeah, you know, it's a great feel-good thing. And it's obviously was McCarthy's approach. We are still unraveling how Matt LaFleur feels about the historical aspects of the Green Bay Packers, but he is firmly looking into the future and the present and not, you know, and literally stripping away pieces of the past. stripping them off the walls. That was like one of his first initiatives. It's like, you know, I'll paraphrase, let's get the old crap out of here, you know? And
right.
That takes some guts, you know, to kind of come in and be like, yeah, great history, but no, we need to look forward. It kind of reminded me of when the Eagles won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, Bill, came to camp, and they still had some of their, like, Super Bowl things, you know, and like, some of their rallying cries, just different, like, Super Bowl-related things on their walls in the locker room to begin the 2018 season. And what Doug Peterson and some of the leaders of that football team decided was, nope, got to go. We don't need to be sitting here thinking about how great last year was. We need to make this year great. And that's, I mean, pretty clearly the approach that Matt LaFleur had when he came in, which was the history is what it is, and I think people should be maybe aware of it, but I don't need to be reminded of it. I don't want the players reminded of it on a daily basis. You know, carve out your own path, your own history, so that, you know, one day that you get looked back on as many of these guys before you did. So, yeah, it's a unique approach, I think. Certainly very different, it would seem, from McCarthy's approach, which was seemingly much more embracing of that history.
Hey, real quick before I let you go, how much do you think, because we still, I think, see some of the influence from Ted Thompson in this draft, how much do you think is in there?
A little. I mean, in the sense that the Packers are, you know, they are just drafting athletes. And they'll, you know, they will figure it out from there. And that was, at least at different points, I mean, you can point to certainly, I mean, Ted Thompson drafted Mike Daniels, Kenny Clark, guys who are, you know, good, strong, big guys, but not your traditional, quote-unquote, athletes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do kind of wonder how much in recent years, how much more, say, Elliott Wolf had, how much more, say, Alonzo Highsmith had, and how much more, say, Brian Gutekunst had in those last couple Ted Thompson drafts. I'm sure some people are hoping that Gutekunst didn't have too much insight because there were some certainly big misses along the way there. But I think we, you know, we're still fairly early. Obviously, Gutekunst has only had two off seasons, two drafts, but what he is establishing is I want the most athletic, but at the same time, large human being. I want large athletes, and I will kind of figure out where they can fit, and I'll let the coaches coach them up. And in some ways, that was what Ted Thompson did. I mean, he got accused, you know, Ted Thompson got accused of too many square peg round hole draft picks, and all of that, and it's a fair criticism, you know, and Nick Perry was maybe not a boom or a bust, you know, considering he played 7 years in Green Bay, but, you know, they're trying the same thing with Rashawn Gary now. I think Rashawn Gary tests better athletically, but this is all about, you know, positional versatility, and that is what they're going for defensively, is Mike Pettin has clearly asked for positionally versatile athletes. And if you just, you know, speaking from Mike Pettin's perspective, if you just let me put them in multiple places and I don't, you know, I don't want to care that they are a defensive lineman or an outside linebacker or rushing from the inside. I just want guys who can do all those things. And it would seem that Pettin and then, of course, through Gutekunst making the draft picks, that that's what they want. And now you just kind of sit back and wait to see if it's a great strategy or, you know, something that goes terribly wrong. But no, I think we are figuring out that is what this team is looking for on defense especially.
Good stuff, Paul. Appreciate it. We'll talk again soon, okay?
All right. See you, Doug.
There you go. That's Paul Emig, our Green Gold Analyst, joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.